Welcome to SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm re-watching this series for the third time. But my co-host, Kathy Campbell, is watching it for the first time, so we make sure not to spoil any storylines beyond the episode we are currently discussing. However, on this show, I have a special guest co-host. Kathy is taking a little break right now, as you might remember from the episode where we discussed surrogate motherhood. Kathy is fixing to deliver a baby in the next couple of weeks, and rather than wait and find out that she can't record because she's in the delivery room, we decided to invite a few guest hosts onto the show. And today I am super happy to have my good friend and podcast maniac, Kelly Gamont. Hey, Kelly, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be a lot of fun. And I enjoyed getting to jump back into Orphan Black.
Oh, good. And, you know, for our listeners, maybe you could tell them a little bit about the other stuff you do podcast-wise and work-wise as well.
Well, I work for Smile Software, Gene's old stomping grounds, and yes. I work with Gene's current stomping grounds at App Camp for Girls, and I do a lot of volunteer work with them, and I do a lot of going other places and talking about App Camp with them, yes. And then I have my own show, my own podcast that I whipped up because there's a TV show that I'm crazy about, and that's Westworld. So Greetings from the Uncanny Valley, which is also on the Incomparable Network, is my show that I do with Don Melton, where we talk about Wild West theme parks and robots and what it all means.
Mm. I'm almost too scared to watch that show, but... I watched the opening credits and I thought, I don't think I'm really mentally and emotionally prepared right now mm-hmm. to watch this. So I am going to watch it later, and later has not come yet, but I know I will. And of course I will listen to Greetings from Uncanny Valley when I do, because I love watching a show and listening to a podcast, and you know, it makes the show that much more fun. So the show we are discussing today, however, has no robots in it, as far as I know. it does have clones, as we know, and it's season 3, episode 3, Formalized, Complex, and Costly. And as I've been doing the previous couple of episodes, I've gone back to the source material for the title, which is Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address when he left the office of President of the United States. And as usual, I found it very interesting to get the whole sentence, and so I'm going to share that with you now. Akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It has also become more formalized, complex, and costly. Pretty cool, huh? I mean, when you consider the research that they do in this show.
Yeah.
It's definitely complex and costly. Formalized, I don't know. Some of their methods, definitely.
Yeah, we see a whole lot of not so formalized.
Yes.
In a lot of episodes.
Yeah, actually, you know. We could start off with that. I was planning to go clone by clone, as we like to try to do if we can, and start with Allison. But now that we're talking about research, I think I'd like to start with Cosima and talk about the formalized and complex research she did in Felix's bathtub.
Oh, geez. That was, yeah. Mostly, I think my reaction to that was very much Felix's yeah. reaction was, and I almost felt bad for him because, like, I couldn't see it, and I felt bad for him that he could when I was yeah. watching. Oh, geez, yeah. Especially consider, like, I feel like Felix is a really good barometer for the audience a lot of the time.
That's a very good point. Yes,
because he's very good at. One of the things I like about art is that art really rolls with whatever it is that's happening. Oh, it turns out my partner down at the police station is just one of a set of people, and that's not really a thing. And, you know, and then it gets weird. And like, Art just seems to roll with it. And I really admire Felix's ability to just sort of sit up and go, this is not how this is supposed to be. This isn't, you all understand how weird this is. Like, I really like that about him, but I also like that he tries to bring a lot of regular life to everybody as well. And like, once he sort of understands that he's kind of inherited all of these people, I really enjoy his reaction to everything. Like, well, if this is, you know, obviously what you need to be doing is sitting in bed and eating ice cream and crying over your breakup, so we're gonna do that now, you know. And and I really like that he has a very human response to everything that's happening. That's one of the things that stands out to me about him.
Yeah. No, that's a great point about Felix, and especially in this particular situation where we have Seth, the clone, the Caster clone who was shot by his brother at the end of the last show, has been dissected, or at least his brain has been opened up by Cosima in Felix's bathroom. And it's so gross, and they don't even show anything really that close up, you know. That, and I was really admiring actually all the sound effects they were using, this kind of crunching and squishing sounds, things that should just make you go bleh. And Felix was trying to be brave, and he said, you know, oh, give Scott a break, he doesn't, you know, he isn't used to the life of crime like you and I are. But then he says a good lab partner should be metaphysically empathetic, which was very funny, because then he, you know, looked over their shoulders and he's like, I looked. Shouldn't have looked. And Cosima's just holding the brain, you know. Anyway, I thought it was very funny, and it is funny and gross.
But I liked how everybody's reaction was legit, but very different. Because Cosima, who has spent loads and loads of time researching stuff like this, is like, oh, you know, it's a brain. Okay. I'm going to do what I need to do to get it to open up his head, to get it out. I'm going to get it out. I'm going to put it in the cooler. And so she's like all business. And then Scott's like, I haven't done enough of this to be cool about it. I don't really, you know. And then Felix is like a person who just, oh, that's wow. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that was like a completely legitimate reaction from every one of them to the same thing, and that they were all so different.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And then later, so they take the brain to the lab. Thank God. And I don't know how Felix's apartment gets cleaned up, but we all know, Kathy and I often give this like a Law and Order POV and say, that blood is not going away. Felix better hope that nobody brings luminol to his apartment. But
I do admire Felix's cleaning abilities, because later on, it never seems like whatever we saw happen actually happened.
No, it's true. And you might not remember this, but you should go back at some point and just find the scene where Allison cleans Felix's apartment, because she moves in with him for a few days. Yes. And that is hysterical.
Yes. Maybe he just keeps calling her when stuff happens.
Well, I don't think he was happy about it.
That too.
So they're in the lab now, and they're Skyping or whatever with Felix back at home, and Felix is teasing Scott, calling him Lieutenant Scotty, and Scott's like, don't call me that. And then he says, and it's Lieutenant Commander.
Yes. So. He's only been to like one Star Trek convention. I just thought that was very entertaining.
Yeah, Cosima is like keeping track. And, you know, so they're going to get into the research and see what they can find out from his brain. And hold that thought. Let's go back to Allison, because speaking of Allison and her incredible suburban goddess housewife abilities, We see her, you know, starting to ramp up her campaign, which is both a political campaign to get on the school board and a new launching a new business, taking over Ramon's drug
empire?
Drug empire. I don't know if it's big enough to be called an empire. But
well, we don't know how many suburbs he worked, so that's hard to say.
That's true.
I have to say, Allison is probably, like, it goes back and forth, but when we spend more time with Allison, she tends to be my favorite because she's always surprising.
Yeah.
Like, she's never not doing anything that one of the other clones would do, but you totally expect it out of Sarah, or you totally expect whatever she's about to do out of Helena or somebody. Mm-hmm. So, but then when Allison does it, mm-hmm. it's just, you know, that she puts all these pieces together in her mind and goes, well, if Ramon is going to college and shutting it down, I can take that off his hands, and this will give me the you know, I basically can win the campaign one pill at a time. And and I love watching it come out of her because it's always so surprising. Like, it's very Clone Club of her to have this plan, and I absolutely believe that she can execute. It's just that I sort of never expect her to be the person to go, Ramon, we'll take your business and your client list off your hands, and mm-hmm. I'm going to use this in order to finance everything now that Donnie doesn't have a job anymore. And just, like, when it comes from her, it's always so surprising. So she's really interesting to watch because of how she puts things together and where she ends up in, as she takes her own path.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's an interesting way of, dare I say, dissecting why I like Allison so much. Because I hadn't thought of it that way before, but yes, she does surprise. I was surprised that she thought of being a drug dealer, you know,
pharmaceutical entrepreneur.
All right. So,
like, she even had the good name for it. That was, like, the best part. Right down to, you know, of course it includes soap and gift boxes, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course it does.
Yeah. What a great way to deliver the product. I love that whole, just the craftiness of it and how nicely, you know, she would flash the pills.
She was so very subtle. And, oh, let me give you a brochure. Like,
yes.
Donnie was right there. It was pretty great.
We have a special for new customers. You know, we give discounts for referrals. Anyway, that was really funny. And of course, I think the woman who plays Marcy Coates, her opponent in the school board election, is really awesome because she does remind me of that kind of, like, you know, has it all together, seemingly, you know, upbeat, positive, and, you know, a force for good, but it doesn't take much to crack her mm-hmm. facade, and then she's like, you're never going to win, you know, let me sell you a house and get you out of the neighborhood.
She stops being nice immediately, like, I'm going to deport you, basically, and you're going to pay for it, you know, and from my neighbor, you know, from my turf, like, yes. It was just, and I loved that, like, this is just one of those moments where Tatiana shines to me, is when she looks Marcy in the eye and says, go sell a house, Marcy. And you know that's not what she's saying. And it is so clear. And it made me, and just watching her, I was just that moment just really impressed me.
Yeah.
Watching them interact and how she had been so pleasant with her, you know, and now the gloves are off and then Marcy walks out. I need to cut something.
I need to cut something. That is what she says. I heard it and I didn't write it down at the moment. And I was thinking, did she say she needs to cut something? Anyway, yeah. Well, as long as every new customer is a vote against Marcy flipping Coats. but yes, we could compile a whole book of Allison's little turns of phrases that don't use any expletives whatsoever, yet are nonetheless expletives.
Oh, yes.
So why don't we now hop to a totally different location and that pretty much the opposite of the suburbs and go to the military base where the Castor experiment is underway, and Dr. Cody is there, and Helena is still in her cell.
With her friend, the scorpion, the imaginary scorpion.
Yes.
I'd forgotten season three was scorpion season, so.
Yeah, so her imaginary scorpion friend, Pupok. Last episode was the iconic, you know, where are these mangoes?
Yes, I loved watching it. Yeah, can I see them?
Yes, I would like to see these mangoes. I'm practicing my Ukrainian.
And I liked, if you keep provoking them, we'll never get any mangoes.
Yeah, that was very good. But in this episode, the one who comes to provoke her is Rudy. So Rudy and Paul appear in their Jeep vehicle hopping out. And so Paul's back on the base, and now Rudy's there too. And Dr. Coates, Virginia Coates, comes right up to Rudy and just wails him, whacks him across the face. Because she's pissed off. Yeah, yes. That was a great moment. Like, Rudy was really cruising for a bruising all along.
he really was. Yeah.
And she wiped that stupid smirk off of his face. And she was furious with him for killing Seth and for not getting Seth back to the base before he glitched. But as we saw in the episode last week, he wasn't ever getting back to the base. He went from being perfectly fine he went from being okay to being completely glitched in a day. And
he completely unraveled over the space of about 36 hours, I would say.
Yeah. So she, while she's mad, and, you know, she does treat these caster clones as her brood, you know, she and they call her mother, which is really weird and creepy sounding in their mouths when they say that.
It is. I remember feeling kind of about it. Like, why would you? Know, I actually, like, at one point, I think I said out loud, like, why do you let them do that? You know, it just sounded so weird.
Well, it must have been her idea. I mean, she's in charge. And she has been, you know, working with them and raising them since they were little boys. I don't think they mention it that quite yet, but at some point somebody mentions, you know, how they were all little together. And which would be another weird, creepy sight I would not like to see.
Yeah. It's implied that their relationship seems to be close and lengthy by the fact that he calls her mom. So
yes.
I'm sure, I know there's like mention of it later, but it seems pretty clear to me at this point in the show that that's exactly what's happening, that she, whether she raised them from the day they were born or from when they were very, very young, that they've sort of been her responsibility this entire time.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I really like about Orphan Black is how many strong women characters are in it. And, you know, everybody, I think that's generally, you know, something that people appreciate. But it's not just, you know, the clones or the younger women in the show, but they have a lot of women of a certain age, you know, 60 plus. I mean, I think Siobhan is probably in her 50s, but Dr. Virginia Cody is one of them. And I like that they have her in there. They could have gotten some impossibly young PhD type, you know, character to play that role, but instead, you know, they got a woman who's definitely aged, and she's very believable in that sense, and I appreciate that. And I also appreciate how I feel like they've done a very interesting job of laying out different characters as mother figures, and the mothering that they provide is wildly different as well. So I started doing a count of mother characters that we've met so far, you know, so we're only in the middle of season three, but I mean, there's Sarah, obviously. There's Helena, counts now because she's pregnant. Marion Bowles, who was the mother of Charlotte. Siobhan, who is the foster mom of Felix and Sarah. Bonnie, the wife of Henry.
Yes, Prolethean, Mrs. Johansson.
Mrs. Johansson and Allison, of course, with her two kids.
Yes.
Have I missed any other mothers in the lineup? I can't think of any. Probably.
Those are the ones that we spend time with, I think, at this point. So those are the ones that I think about. But I like sort of all the forms it takes, like not just all the different people who are mothers, but all of their approaches to doing that. And it is very interesting to watch. And I also like that the definition of child is different to almost all those people, because Kira is Sarah's biological child and Allison's children are adopted. And then there's Dr. Cody and the Caster clones who, for all we know, have no relationship, no biological tie to each other, but have become a family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then Felix and all the clones is a family. And, you know, Mrs. S, who is a foster mom to these two. And as an adopted kid myself, that's a thing that I really like seeing, is that there are other people who have the same sort of definition of family. Like, it is what you make it. It's not just who you were born to or whatever. You know, like, there's a way that you can carve your own family out of the world that you are in. And I really enjoy seeing lots of different portrayals of that. Because, like, I'm an adopted kid and my parents are divorced and, you know, it's a whole thing. So then it's a whole thing. And so, like, my family, you know, is a PowerPoint presentation. It's not, you know, it's not a tree. So, you know, and I have an adopted brother. So there's a whole nother, like, bunch of that happens. So, you know, like, when you get, like, when you really spend a tiny bit of time and dig into everybody's family, like, it turns out everybody's definition of family has flexed a little bit because they found a part of their family tree they didn't know existed, or somebody got divorced and remarried and that other person has all of that family that they brought in, or you're adopted, or you're a foster, you know, of somebody for many years. And, like, all of those definitions of family are valid, and that's one of the things that I think continues to draw me into this show, is getting to see all those sort of non-traditional. You know, these two people got married and had a child, who got married and had a child, who got married and had a child. And that's like, you know, like, there are those families out there, but that's not the only kind. And so it's nice to see lots of different kinds of family. And this show does spend a lot of time portraying that. And I really like it.
Yeah. So just a pop quiz or a quick survey question. Which one would you choose to be your mom if you were a kid?
Oh, gosh. If I was a kid, well, when I was a kid, it probably would have been Sarah, no question, because it's always adventure.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I want Siobhan to be my mom. I want her to be my mom now.
She'd be good. If I was picking one for other people, it would probably be Allison, who, like, will turn the world inside out in the name of her kids to make sure that they are safe and happy and healthy and thriving. Like, she's always going to do whatever she needs to do for them. And which is another thing that I really admire about her. That's one thing that they all have in common. You know, Helena ends up in the situation that she's in because she's trying to protect her babies. And, you know, it's the same, you know, and like, you know, the reason Helena ended up at the base is because somebody was doing everything they could for Kira.
I think it's cool that you have identified that whole theme and the diversity that it portrays in Orphan Black, because there's other kinds of diversity we see as well. And that, I think, is what's drawn people to the show and made them really passionate about it, is that they maybe have felt marginalized or left out, and here's a show that puts them kind of front and center. And so, yay, Orphan Black. Just another reason we love it. So I did want to mention one other thing that happened at the base that just cracked me up was, I get the clones mixed up very frequently. So if you hear me say Mark, when really I mean Rudy, you are free to correct me. And I because I, you know, they all look alike. So
they do.
But Mark, not Mark, Rudy. See, I'm glitching Rudy. Now. Rudy is at the base now, and he goes to have a look at Helena, and he says something creepy like, you know, well, you even smell the same as Sarah. And Helena says, you are the ugliest Mark
yeah.
of all.
I loved that. And then at one point, she called one of them like Mark-faced boys or yeah. something. Another Mark-faced boy. And I thought that was funny, too. And I wonder how much of it is just her not caring which right. one it is, and how much of it is her deliberately being dismissive of, like, all of them, you yeah. know, and, like, knowing that that's going to get under their skin, that they're that to her, they're just all the same and she doesn't care.
Right.
And either way, it is hilarious to watch them react.
So let's go back up north, as I assume we are in Canada somewhere, with Mark and Gracie in their motel room, their honeymoon.
Yes.
Awesome honeymoon so far. although they do finally fool around, which is nice that they were holding that out for a bit. But Gracie is wondering why they are where they are. And she talks to Mark about, you know, why can't we just have our honeymoon? And he said, well, you know, I'm not actually AWOL from the Army. I never left it. Mm-hmm. And your father stole valuable scientific material that I was assigned to recover. We are free of your people, but we're not clear of mine. I have yes. to go find that. And then they'll leave us alone. So he doesn't want to dump Gracie. He just wants to make sure that the casters don't come ruin the, you know, the relationship that he's finally gotten into. Mm-hmm. So Gracie's pissed off. But the reason, because she realizes she knows the area where they are. She remembers
yeah, I don't
from
think
her
she,
childhood.
I don't think she asked. I don't, like, I think she had a pretty good idea why they were there. Mm-hmm. Like, that they were there because Willard Finch lived there. Mm-hmm. And even if she couldn't put together why he had any business with Willard Finch, I think she's mm-hmm. pretty sure that's why this is the Motel 6 they picked or whatever it is. Yeah. So I feel like that's probably, I feel like she had a suspicion and mm-hmm. that's why she asked him. And I was really glad to see that they, that he actually did just tell her. So.
Right. So apparently Finch has something that Henrik gave to him. And Mark wants it, but Gracie says, you should let me go because I'm the one he knows and he's a very dangerous person and he's not just going to hand something over to you. And so she goes to this farm and there's this like very crusty old farmer dude, Willard mm-hmm. Finch. The actor's name is Nick Campbell, I think. And you mentioned, well, I recognized him from another Canadian series I watched called The Republic of Doyle. And you've seen Republic of Doyle?
Yeah.
I love that show.
Okay.
So funny and goofy. Yeah. So he was the ex-husband of the main character's wife or, you know, the main character's father's wife. But he's really good at that. I am, you know, an old dude who's kind of a con artist, but I'm a fun con artist and you might want to hang out with me. So mm-hmm. he was a little creepy, you know, vis-a-vis Gracie, because he was, you know, making comments about her, how she really blossomed, and you know how girls love to hear that. So and she actually, this was one of my favorite Gracie moments though, because she says she wants the stuff that he has, and he pulls out this box and says, well, there's a storage fee, however, $1,000. And she says, I don't have that. And he says, that's going to be a problem. And she says, the problem is your lack of faith in us. And then she says, like, we Prolethians make fast friends, but we also make fearsome enemies. And I was like, ooh, she's a chip off the old block.
She just leaned in, and all of a sudden, she was a different person. And it was, and I, where did it go? I wrote it down because I was so impressed. Shall I disrupt my mother's grief to tell her you're holding out for 30 pieces of silver?
Yeah, that was a good line too.
Oh, yeah. Like, he should have given her anything at that point. Here's the box you wanted. I've got $8 in my pocket. Here's the keys to the truck, the deed to the house. Like, I feel like in that moment, just in staring him down, that she could have whatever.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with her in that moment. And she's, you know, she's only halfway through her really rough day today.
No. What'd you call it? The terrible, horrible. The
terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day.
Yes, that's true. She is having a bad day. And so she gets the box. She brings it back to Mark. And he opens it up. And he's like, there's just junk in here. And whatever he's looking for. So they never say what Mark is expecting to find, but it's not in there, and he assumes that Finch is holding out on them. Mm-hmm. So he goes himself to Finch's farm to force him to give him what he's looking for. And I'm pretty sure that Finch has no idea what he's looking for at this point. He handed over the stupid box. He didn't get $1,000 for it.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to mess with the Prolethians at all. But Mark is really on a tear for, you know, good reasons. You know, from his point of view, he needs to find this thing so he can give it back to the caster experiment and have them off his back, or at least think he can get them off his back. But so he comes with a hammer, among other things, and he starts torturing Finch. And that was, again, for the audience, not a very nice moment to watch.
But again, like, they didn't go as far as a lot of shows do with that sort of stuff.
True.
So much like cracking open Mark's head in the beginning of the episode, like, you, the thing that makes it so awful is because you are filling it in yourself in your own head. They right. don't have to show it to you, because whatever you're imagining is the thing that gets to you the most. And, like, for you, that's maybe a different thing than for me, but it doesn't matter, because both of us are, like, crawling behind the couch going, nope, 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 nope.
Yeah. I mean, if it was really explicit, I wouldn't be watching this show. So that's a good point. So let's hold Mark at the farm, Finch's farm.
Yes.
But trying to extract information and some kind of scientific material that he needs to get. And I think we go to Art and Sarah now, because Art still wants to help Sarah figure out how to get Helena back. And he, you know, he says, come on, I've got a lead, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're staking out this building, waiting for what turns out to be Alexis, the midwife. So Alexis is the one who was at Helena's side when she was, when the eggs were implanted. And she was also the one that Helena said she would gut her like a fish if she talked to the kids that way again. And she's Catherine Alexandri, the actress who is Tatiana Maslany's acting partner.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So Art comes after her and says he needs to talk to her, and she says she doesn't know where Helena is, but tells Art and Sarah about the eggs that were harvested and implanted. And that's where I like where she says, I regret breaking bread with abominations.
Yes.
And, Sarah's like, if Helena is an abomination, I'm much worse. And you better be scared. So that sets off two things that happen. One is that Alexis goes to the Prolethians, and there's Bonnie now in charge. Bonnie, the, you know, mother of Gracie. Mm-hmm. And she at first says, you know, you're banished. We're not even talking to you. But she says, well, I think I know where we can find Gracie.
And that gets Mrs. Johansson's attention.
That gets her attention. So that thread's coming back at the end for sure. Meanwhile, Art and Sarah go also to find Gracie and Mark, and they have this very nice conversation in the car ride. And it's an important one, because until now, we're not really sure, why is Art so damn helpful?
Yeah, because he really just, like, and this is a moment where, like, this is the episode where he's talking to Cosima on Skype, and she says, welcome to Clone Club. So, mm-hmm. you know, whatever you thought about his involvement before, like, he's totally in. He's up to his eyeballs in this now. And yeah. he doesn't get to turn back. I did like his moment when they were sitting in the diner. Mm-hmm. And she says, I showed you a dead clone in a tub this morning. And he goes, no, you did not. Yeah. And I really enjoyed that moment of denial. Because again, like, he seems to be pretty good with everything. So that moment, I got a kick out of. I know it was, you know, for official purposes, but it was right. just very funny to see that be his reaction.
Yeah, that's right. That was funny. So I'm trying to remember exactly how they don't find Gracie or Mark, right?
Because, no.
And Art goes back to, you know, his regular job, his day job, yeah. because Sarah's saying, like, look, you can't mess up your day job. We need you to be a cop. Just like they needed Beth to be a cop, and losing Beth on the inside was a big blow for the clones
right.
trying to find out what was going on. So Art basically took her place in that role. But then Sarah, how does Sarah figure out? Because she goes to the Finch Farm. How did she figure out how to get there? Now it's totally, I've forgotten.
I don't remember that part. What I remember was when they were talking to the midwife, Art goes back to the car and hears... Mm-hmm. And they tell him that the truck he was looking for got pulled over for a speeding ticket near someplace.
Oh.
And it, like, wasn't secret. And I think that was the bit of information that the midwife took back to Bonnie.
Oh, right. Right. And you know what? Now I remember. Then, so Sarah does go to the motel, and she finds Gracie, and she tells Gracie about Mark being a clone.
Yeah, well, because Mark gave her money and said, go down and treat yourself. I'll be back in
right.
an hour.
And
so
that
she's
was
got
in the
like.
Diner.
Yeah, so she's got like a root beer float and a cheeseburger as she's sitting at the in the diner.
Oh, right,
and
right.
Sarah turns around to leave and sees her there praying over her food. So even mm-hmm. if she had a hunch that kind of looks like Gracie, seeing her pray over her food probably clinched it.
Yeah. So that was a revelation for Gracie, because she knew that Mark had this whole AWOL army secret mission thing going on, but mm-hmm. she didn't know about the Castor clones
right.
at all. And if you remember from the beginning, when Gracie first came across Helena, like, she could barely refer to her as a person.
Yeah.
She had been so raised to think that the clones were abominations, just like Alexis said.
And called her it, I think, a lot.
She did call it it. Yeah.
yeah.
That was really weird. So Sarah finds out where Mark went, because Gracie is worried about Mark
mm-hmm.
getting in trouble with Finch. And she did say something at one point where... she says, we really don't need another bloodbath today, basically today.
Yeah, like it need not, like, not everything needs to end in violence or mm-hmm. a violent, bloody incident, or I don't remember exactly how she put it, mm-hmm. but she was basically telling him, like, it would really be awesome if you could just keep a low profile for right now.
Yeah.
So, and I really did like that she did offer to go first in for exactly the same set of reasons. Like, we don't need this to be violent. You know, if you're trying to keep a, if you're trying to lay low, like, it's probably not a good idea to shoot up the joint. So, you know, let's try it my way first. All I'm going to do is talk to him. And so I really liked that she was still motivated by that. You know, she cares about him and wants him to be okay. And, you know, she gives him the kiss before he leaves and tells him to come back safely. And, and it was a nice moment between them. And it, you know, it was one of the moments of humanity that the Castor clones have. And there aren't many of those. So it was really nice to see them together in this episode.
Remind me where Cosima gives Sarah the information, the revelation of, that she found out from examining Seth's brain. Like, I don't remember exactly at what point Sarah knows that, but it's got to be after Art left.
Yes, because Sarah goes out to the Finch place herself. Mm-hmm. I don't know quite how she got there, but she got there. And then as she's walking into the barn looking for Willard, she gets a phone call and tells Cosima it's not a good time.
Right.
And Cosima starts explaining it to her in science instead of in English. And so then eventually she does say something along the lines of, I do you know what that means? And she says something like, I hope it's English. Mm-hmm. And then so that's how she gets the news broken to her that, all of, like, there's so much DNA overlap between, his brain and our DNA, we're related. And so she sort of lobs this bomb into Sarah's lap as Sarah is tiptoeing into a barn under, like, uncertain conditions. She has no idea if Mark's still there, what state of mind he's in, if he's coming undone the way the other one did, and, you know, one thing and another. So she kind of, like, has to process all of this at once and be quiet and and look for Willard, and then finds him. And out pops Mark. Hi! And so then she kind of can't keep it to herself and tries to explain to him that he should be helping her and Helena because we are family.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So they're, you know, brothers and sisters, apparently. And Mark, you know, he doesn't believe her. And even if he does believe her, he's not accepting that they are family together. And he starts to leave. And at that moment, he's standing by his truck and, like, he gets shot. And it's like, what the hell happened there?
out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was definitely
bullet
a moment.
Leg.
And then we see there's Bonnie with, you know, her shotgun. And so she, thanks to what Alexis told her, she found Gracie. And Gracie told her what was going on. And she was saying to Gracie, well, you made a mistake. Obviously, he took advantage of your stupidity, which is such a great mom. Anyway,
I was really like, I thought she genuinely cared, and then just manipulates the heck out of her. I felt so bad for Gracie.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to look at the list again. I'm pretty sure Bonnie is the bottom of my list of mothers in Orphan Black I would like to have, and that's including Virginia Cody.
Oh, yes, I would take Virginia Cody over Bonnie Johansson any day of the week.
Yeah, no, Bonnie was really mean to Gracie in the whole bit.
The whole time.
When Helena, you know, was there, and Gracie didn't like Helena, and Bonnie sewed her mouth shut. I don't know if you remember that, but that was real creepy.
Oh, I do. Yeah, it was awful.
Yeah, so she's coming out. She just wants to kill Mark because he abandoned them. He tricked them. She's not trying to kill Mark to avenge Gracie. That's for sure.
Yeah. It basically doesn't have anything to do with Gracie. It's you lied to me.
Yeah.
Like, and as an, you know, and also, yeah, my daughter, whatever, but you lied to me and to my husband, and I'm now here to avenge that.
Yeah. So Mark, runs into the cornfield, and Bonnie comes after him. And then we switch back to Sarah's point of view, looking at the cornfield, and the shot rings out, and birds fly, you know, and scatter. And that's the end of the show.
Yeah, we're done now.
We're done now. That's a cliffhanger, if you know.
Yeah. And it was, as an episode, I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Because it's one where a lot of plots advance.
Yes.
But we also get some good character moments. And, like, you can't do, like, you know, bombshell after bombshell after bombshell, because you just end up with, you know, exposition fatigue. And then you can't do an entire episode where everybody stands around and talks about what's happening. So I really, like, one thing that a lot, I noticed this about a number of episodes of Orphan Black, is that there's always a thing or two that happens in every episode, but there's also, like, those character moments, mm-hmm. also. And having those, you know, where Marcy sashays into Allison's garage and they have that showdown, like, that's a character moment. Mm-hmm. And having that, you know, in the same episode as Sarah, our DNAs match, like, they're our brothers. And, you know, and having, like, all of that stuff happen, that's one of the things I like about this show, is that everybody gets a chance to develop their plot. You know, they all get something to do, but then they also get these character moments, these things that help sort of fill them in as people, that make them easier to care about, and it makes it easier to be invested in their storyline. Mm-hmm. And it makes it a lot more fun to watch that way. And, you know, not every show necessarily has that kind of balance in it. Sometimes you just get a lot of stand around and talk, or walk and talk, and then sometimes you get a whole bunch of, like, all these plots jumped off at the same time. Yeah. And, like, how do I keep up with all this excitement? And I really enjoy that particular feature of Orphan Black, where we get a little bit of both, and that it's always, you know, interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree about that. And I do feel like they do keep you moving every week into the next story. And or in my case, you know, the first two seasons were out when I watched it. And so I watched 20 episodes and, like, you know, a week, because mm-hmm. I couldn't stop. And if it weren't for this podcast, I wouldn't be able to stop either. But because I'm watching it with Kathy and we're watching it one by one, I don't, like, I'm tempted to just watch another episode or two tonight, but I'm not going to, because I need to be fresh for the next episodes, yeah, of SestraCast. So it's a good thing. It's actually a productivity booster to be doing this podcast. I'm just saying.
I'm limited to one. Yeah.
But Kelly, thank you so much for watching this with me and chatting about it. It was really fun, yes, to talk about your impressions, and because we haven't had much time, you know, personally to discuss it since you started watching,
yeah,
it. And I hope, you know, you can come back sometime, and when Kathy's here, and then we can have a three-person discussion. I'm sure we'll have stuff. I'm sure Kathy would enjoy that too.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun.
I want to wrap up the show doing Kathy's part, because she's not here, as you know, and say thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. You can find us on the internet at sestracast.com, and we're also on Twitter also as at sestracast. I'm Mac Genie, and Kathy is Mrs. Soup on Twitter as well. And feel free to let us know what you thought of this episode, or who your favorite mother would be from Orphan Black. We'd love to talk about things like that. And thanks again for listening.